This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
From the Embassy Row studios in the crap part of Soho, it's the Men in Blazers podcast, Rog.
Oh, post-Thanksgiving, pre-Hanukkah special.
How was your Thanksgiving, Rog?
It felt like it lasted for about a month.
It lasted a long time, there's
give
no
or
doubt.
Take.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it, Dave, was to do with the quality of the football.
Yeah.
Which we will talk about later.
Association football, you mean here.
Didn't do enough to numb my pain. Let's just say that.
Yeah.
Well, I've got one question about Thanksgiving, Dave.
Yeah.
How long, plus or minus 5 years, can it be until the Premier League runs a full slate of Thanksgiving games?
Maybe, but there was just too much sport on. There was so much sport.
And not enough at the same time.
I had the Davis Cup going on. Great Britain winning the Davis Cup for the first time since 1936, Rog.
The Michael Davis Cup.
I remember it. My children thought
that you sponsored that.
I have thought about buying the rights to the Davis Cup because it's this once great, great sporting event that is so in decline.
Yep.
It was almost impossible to find. I had to watch it online. Tennis Channel not available on Cablevision of Long Island. There was the NFL football, my Orlando Magic looking like a half-decent basketball team again. All the college football on Saturday.
You're missing out
NFL,
the most important
all
thing.
The soccer the Spur- on Saturday and
Tottenham
Sunday.
Tottenham Hotspur's traditional Detroit Lions role of playing Europa League football on Thanksgiving
oh, that's
afternoon.
Right. Yeah, Thursday, absolutely.
But really, how long can it be until the Premier League, with an eye on this market,
yep,
Richard Scudamore, incredible Americanophile.
Yeah.
Cincinnati Reds fan, as he revealed at BlazerCon, till he says, you know what? Going to sprinkle some games onto the Thursday. Give America what it really wants.
Who would be the Detroit Lions, though, of the English Premier League? You know, the Detroit Lions play every Thanksgiving, traditionally. Who would be, which I found out for the first time this year, I've been here for 745 years, and I didn't realise that until this Thanksgiving. Who would be the Detroit Lions of the English Premier League? Maybe Sunderland, someone like that.
Please God, they'll still be up in the Premier League by the time this rolls around.
Everton, America's team, really, Rog.
I'd love that, David. Yeah. I would love that.
Maybe they could schedule the Everton-Bournemouth game for every Thanksgiving.
I would mute the conversation around my Thanksgiving table.
How was your Thanksgiving this year, Rog?
You know what? I was just really mentally counting down until the football took off. And the thing that really annoyed me mostly about the whole Thanksgiving experience, there wasn't even an early 7:45 AA game on Saturday to numb my pain.
Yeah, there wasn't. There certainly wasn't.
We got big sports news, Dave, to depack together.
Yeah, quite apart from Andy Murray pretty much single-handedly winning the Davis Cup for Britain. Kobe Bryant retiring, Rog. The end of an era.
Oh, but even more importantly, with a poem.
Yeah.
He let his inner freak flag fly. And Kobe's inner freak flag is evidently Ralph Waldo Emerson-esque.
Wow, it is.
And we both know, no matter what I do next, I'll always be that kid with the rolled up socks. Garbage can in the corner. 0.05 seconds on the clock. Ball in my hands. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. What an emotionally, manipulatively brilliant piece of poetry, Kobe Bryant.
A little bit self-congratulatory.
I mean, yes, he probably didn't write it, Dave. But show me a politician who's written his or her best lines.
Yeah. I love the fact, though, that he announced to his teammates that he was going to be handing out a poem after the game in the next couple of days to announce his retirement.
Yeah.
I love that pre-planning.
Yeah, a poem, lads. I'm going to be... just wanted to tell you, no big deal, but I'm going to be handing out a poem.
I'm not using prose. I'm using poetry.
I would love to have been in that Players Tribune creative meeting. When they went through the options, they got all the temps together, the interns, you know, the brain trust over there. And they said, Kobe, retirement announcement. Let's kind of, what do they call it? Brainstorming.
Yeah.
Ideation.
Ideation. I love ideation.
And the first person I imagine would be like, let's do it as, you know.
Let's make a film.
Hamilton. Hamilton's really, let's do a musical.
That would have been great.
They'd be like, no, that's too Julie Andrews.
Kobe the musical. That will happen on Broadway, let's face it.
What about a mime or an avant-garde ballet?
Yeah.
To Mark Morris.
Uh-huh.
And then someone's like, stop motion animation. Like Fantastic Mr. Fox. Haikus, passe. And then Kobe, I imagine him saying, I can't defend, I can't score anymore. I can't hurt my opponents. But I can still save American poetry.
But he still can play. He can't do all the flashy stuff that he did, but he still can. You watch Kobe,
yep.
And still he can hit that drop step, you know, fake out a defender, go for a simple layup. He can still do the simple stuff.
Because I've got to tell you, when I read newspaper reports about Kobe right now, this is a line from one that I just pulled from his kind of retirement wake of. With his body old and tired and broken, there was no way for a graceful end on the basketball court. His jump shot has abandoned him. The brilliant burst of step is gone. He can't drive. He can't defend. I picture Wayne Rooney.
Do you know what's so funny? I was saying, because we were talking in preparing the Men in Blazers show, and when we were going through the Wayne Rooney lowlights from the game against Leicester, the comparison against Jamie Vardy, and in a year where Wayne Rooney has broken the England national team scoring record.
Also a poet.
He is also a poet.
Yeah, he writes poems.
I said to you at some point, and we were just like just reading the comments and like thinking about what we were going to say, and I was thinking, who would grow old in the Premier League? Like that idea of being once great and now in front of everyone.
The answer is Brad Friedel.
Yeah, well, he grew quite more old. Than old.
He grew quite old. But your point, is who would want to decompose in public?
Show their diminishing skills. It's just a terrible thing.
Well, it's funny,
and we're so unreasonable about it.
It's funny we talk about Wayne and poetry, because in the documentary about Wayne Rooney that Sky put together, excellent one with Gary Lineker,
Wayne Rooney hosting.
His wife did say, and Gary said, tell me something you wouldn't expect about Wayne. Mm-hmm. And his wife, Colleen, she just looked at the camera without a beat, and she goes, he writes poems all the time. And Gary Lineker hid his surprise and goes, really? And she goes, yeah, we were on holiday the other week. And I woke up by my bed, and there was just on me side table, there was just a little poem Wayne had written for me. And I just warmed to it. As I did that Kobe chose the poem. Because if you think about it, how many Americans have had, if you look at the flow
that
of American
poem was,
history.
Was back in 10 minutes, Colleen, gone to get some beers.
Try and get your head down. And if not, I say cheers.
Colleen thinks they're poems. They're just his notes for what he's going to go and do next. Taking the dog for a walk. Please record X Factor.
Couldn't get toilet to flush. Sorry, love.
Get Liquid Plumber.
It was a poem.
Get Liquid Plumber.
Oh, but think about it, David. How many Americans have had their poems read as many times as Kobe?
Yeah, not me.
Maya Angelou.
Yeah.
Robert Frost. Who else?
Walt Whitman, maybe. I mean, not many.
Walt Whitman's had more double-doubles.
Yeah, Andrew
than
Dice
Kobe
Clay.
This season.
Andrew Dice Clay. But that's mainly him reading his own poems. Not many, Rob. The greats. Okay, Rog, we got a big announcement of our own. Our Men in Blazers national team jerseys, they have sort of arrived.
They have arrived.
They have arrived.
They're upon us. I think you organised another sweatshop.
Okay,
you
good.
Bought another sweatshop.
Good, I thought maybe we had five.
Oh, yeah.
We've been talking about these for a long time.
We have, and thanks to Adidas. They're real, David. They are beautiful.
Uh-huh. They have real tweed in them.
Honestly, lifting them up, David, I felt like how other people of other religions would if they were to touch the Turin shroud.
The shroud of Turin.
Yeah, I was aghast.
I didn't see the face of Jesus in it. Although, to each his own, to each his own.
For those who don't remember the Men in Blazers national team, we founded it, was it 3 years ago? Feels longer.
Mm-hmm.
In reaction to San Marino taking the field against England with kind of bartender strikers, postman defenders and plumber goalkeepers. They took on England in Euro qualifying. And we began to imagine a team made out of America's best soccer-playing electricians, nightclub bouncers and the like.
Cabinet makers.
Oh, cabinet maker on the left flank. We dominate. We faxed San Marino to challenge into a game. We've actually faxed them 17 times.
Yeah, they don't have facsimile machines yet in San Marino. That was the mistake we made.
Well, they don't have ones that reply to us. Yeah. Our motto was, we wrote to them, we said, we have passion, we have respect, we have air miles. 3,000 of you, GFOPs, volunteered to play. Warren Barton, the great...
Coach Barton.
Oh, Coach Barton signed on to be our manager.
Mm-hmm.
But San Marino are yet to respond, despite our repeated, some would say stalking faxes at this point. Gibraltar have also chosen to ignore us, which I understand.
Uh-huh.
They're fighting for legitimacy. Yeah. The last thing they want
to
do is play clown teams. So we're still searching for an actual opponent to play. And in the meantime, Addy stepped forward and conjured an actual national team jersey, David.
By the way, we've got to send Coach Barton a jersey.
Yeah.
Got to remember.
Well, if we've only got 1,500, they are a very limited edition.
Oh, well, now we've got 1,499.
1,499. It was designed by the two of us, this beauty. Yeah. The inspiration was the 1978 Peru World Cup jersey.
Plus tweed.
Yeah, that's what we thought. The first jersey I ever saw with a diagonal band that I just fell in love with. Theirs was white with this red sash.
Yeah.
We worked with our friends at Freeman's to design a tweed-inspired diagonal.
Yeah.
Making this the first ever diagonal band on the soccer jersey based on tweed.
Yeah.
It's also got a GFOP design jock tag, which is truly gorgeous.
And I must say, the shirt, because we tried them on yesterday for sizing purposes, they are fashion-forward long. Long is very in men's fashion.
Unless you play for Arsenal.
And so that jock tag really sticks out.
If you think of Arsenal's shirt fit, now think the opposite. You've got our jerseys.
Yeah.
Hashtag Daddy Wants.
They're really nice.
They are beautiful. We're grateful to Adi. They're going to be available this week, we hope, in men's, women's and kids' sizes.
Yeah.
Really, really limited number of each because we tried to spread we didn't want to get US women's national team angry about not making for men, so we made for men as well as for women and children.
Yeah, we did. No canine version yet, but we're working on that. So it'd be amazing. Christmas gift, Hanukkah gift. Be very, or just a gift for just
for druids.
Being alive.
For druids. Druids.
Yeah, the druids. The druids. Big GFOPs, the druids. Love our stuff. Okay, Rog, that's exciting. All the details will be at meninblazers.com and on our social media. Okay, Rog, we got a packed show. We celebrate Jamie Vardy breaking the Premier League's consecutive game scoring record in Leicester's top-of-the-table clash with Man United. We break down the on-field garbage, both figurative and literal, in Spurs' draw with Chelsea. And we dissect in painful detail Diego Costa's bib toss heard around the world.
Bibmageddon.
Plus, we preview the MLS Cup final and the Ballon d'Or shortlists. Come on, Carly Lloyd. Okay, Rog, to the football. Beautifully done, Rog. Cheers to you.
Cheers to you, to Portland Timbers, Columbus Crew, and all who sail in her.
Yeah. We are now 14/38 of the way through the Premier League season. That reduces, Rog, 7/19. We're that far in, more than a third. And despite a tight table that portends very little, one man has ensured his name will be etched into the season's annals. What an odd weekend, though.
It was. It was a weekend of goals. Some would say one too many goals, Dave.
Yeah, some would say.
But it's also a weekend of, let's be candid, crap football. Massive games.
Yeah.
High expectation. Huge narrative cliffhangers.
Disappointment.
Big games. Leicester United. Spurs Chelsea. Liverpool Swansea. Insipid.
Man City Southampton, I'd add to that list.
Insipid dank stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, Robbie Earl's rainforest moustache growth was this weekend's MVP.
That was amazing.
And I'll say this. We'll talk about them. Thank God for MLS playoffs. They were like a palate cleanser at an old school restaurant.
Sunday night, yeah.
It was like frenzy. It was nerves. It was all spaghetti-legged action. But to the Premier League, David.
First of all, Leicester won. Man United won. Jamie Vardy scores in his 11th straight game to break Ruud van Nistelrooy's record. In the 24th minute, Vardy darted behind the United defence, pointed to where he wanted it. Christian Fuchs delivered, and he coolly slotted the ball past David De Gea. A Bastian Schweinsteiger header in first-half injury time levelled the score, and the game between the table's top two teams ended in a draw. But the result was overshadowed by a striker whose play is as spiky as his hair.
Oh, this was supposed to be top-of-the-table Leicester City's day of reckoning.
Yep.
As Matthew in the Gospels, when the Son of Man comes in his glory and the angels with him, he will separate people one from another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. But for all the fairy tale narrative surrounding their kind of Drake-ish rise, Leicester City started from the bottom, now we're here. They'd only played four biggish teams so far this season. Tottenham, Stoke, Southampton, they'd lost to Arsenal. Manchester United were meant to thrash them, Davey, but it was not to be.
No, it was definitely not to be. And one of the reasons that Leicester are so devastating is how quick they are, their speed, their counter-attacking, how well the players seem to understand each other. They play like 11 best friends, Rog.
They do, with one kind of tiny little gaunt, angle-cheeked alpha male at the apex of that 11 best friend kind of circle, David. Because this game, going into it, all
beers
the hype
on the coach on the planes, Jamie Vardy.
£40,000-a-week superstar, a man with a common touch. We both know people like him growing up in England, don't we? They're a spiky kind of runt of a character.
It's amazing. You say £40,000-a-week superstar because that's such a low salary in the Premier League. And, of course, that's like $65,000 a week.
But I grew up with so many people like him, with his kind of potato chip face, his angular cheeks.
Yeah.
You look at him, you can see a...
They're the guys that hog the slot machine and the pool table down at the pub. And if you ever want to sort of have a go, or you and your mates want to go and play too, he'll basically take you out with a pool cue.
Full train.
Yeah.
He's the guy with his feet on the seat.
Yeah, without a doubt.
And he wants you to ask him to move him. Dare, do not ask Jamie Vardy.
Yeah.
When you run into him in England, to get his feet off the seats on the subway. But you look at him, you see a straight familial lineage back to the days of the Picts and Anglo-Saxons roaming the English countryside, mm-hmm. all the way through Dickens' Artful Dodger. He's the one that said, "Please, sir, can I have more?" And then just took it. And you were saying yesterday, you couldn't believe the hype around this record chase, Dave. You were saying, if a Croatian like Jelovic or Wilfred Bony, who was kind of chasing the record, would we have made such a big deal out of it?
Well, I think my point was, I think it's an amazing achievement and don't want to take anything away from him, particularly, you know, the circumstances in which he's achieved it during a very competitive time in the Premier League. However, I followed the Premier League pretty intensely for, you know, the last 2.5 decades. I don't ever remember talking about the consecutive Premier League game scoring record. It's not a record that people have thought a lot about. I think the reason we're so excited about it, the reason that everybody's got so excited, is one, Jamie Vardy is English. Two, he plays for Leicester City. And three, just the kind of goal scorer he is. And you have to give him credit for that. He's not a standard centre forward knocking it in with his head. He is just I've used it before. He is a Suarez-like, aggressive, attacking, selfish striker.
He's a scrawny bird of prey. And this story, Davo, is all about romance. Mm-hmm. There is an element of the Englishness, but there's also the kind of Jenny from the block rise from a man working in a factory age 23 to becoming a England international age 28. And the context, he and Leicester are doing it when so many big stars and big teams are crap and falling. Costa, Cesc, Sturridge, Rooney. I mean, you watch Vardy handshake with Rooney pregame. We watched that how many times with JW
like
yesterday?
145.
It was like glimpsing two players 2 years apart, but decades in form. It was like seeing the ghost of Christmas past shake hands with the ghost of Christmas future. I watch it over and over, and I may be projecting, Davo, but I think you can spot the exact second when Rooney realises to his horror that he's living Vardy's career in reverse, and within the next 3 or 4 years, he's going to be the starting striker at Stockbridge Park Steels.
And look how excited we all get when we have a significant DeAndre Yedlin throw-in, which we're going to talk about a little bit later.
The throw-in you're talking about, is that,
you know,
what it's called?
And I
then?
Think for English fans of the Premier League, for the English media, desperate to see English players get a chance on teams, Jamie Vardy represents not just Jamie Vardy, but on behalf of all English players struggling to get into these teams and get a game.
One of the many hilarious undertows to this Vardy story, and I think it kind of captures his energy, his spirit, his hunger. Back in 2011, when he was playing for Fleetwood, mm-hmm. tiny, like single A equivalent, he tweeted 4 words that have now been dug up and resuscitated Trevor Noah style. It's a tweet, famous now, legendary in England over the past month. Jamie Vardy tweeted, "Chat get banged." Chat get banged.
Yeah, you know what Colleen Rooney calls that? Poetry.
It's a poetry. America, this is a massive phrase now in England with Jamie Vardy's
chat get banged.
Chat means if you talk badly about me, perhaps behind my back, perhaps via what's known as a subtweet, get banged. I will confront you and perhaps punish your disrespect with my fists. Chat get banged. And that is the essence of Jamie Vardy. If House Vardy had a shield, it would say that on it, chat get banged, under a sigil of a smashed beer glass to be used in a bar fight, Dave. And that is the essence of everything that's great about
it. An English player with a slightly foreign sounding name, Roger. I'm sure the Vardys sound Norman to me. These sounds like it came over in the Norman conquest from, dare I say it, France, Rog.
Possibly an infantryman, the Vardys.
Possibly, but perhaps in cavalry.
Oh, that shatters my Anglo-Saxon...
Yeah, I think Vardy could be French.
Another thing, though, Davo, in the pre-game, I was fascinated to watch how Leicester would play with the world watching. I remember the US team at the 2010 World Cup. They were fantastic. But the moment I knew they were doomed was when Bill Clinton walked into the locker room and drank a Bud with Bocanegra, I think before the Ghana game. And I just knew they were done. That was the second when that entire squad suddenly became aware just how big they'd become. Mm-hmm. And once a team becomes self-conscious, they often crumble. I expected Leicester to crumble in this game, but they refused. They were determined. They were organised. They let United come onto them. They willed United onto them. And they bet that Wayne Rooney couldn't hurt them. And then they sat deep to deny Martial the space to run in behind, and then coiled to strike on the counter-attack, and counter-attack they did.
No, it was brilliant coaching, brilliant tactics by Claudio Ranieri. Not sure that he knew exactly which team he was coaching, but at the points that he believed he was preparing to coach Leicester against Man United, he set up really well. And the goal that came was a perfect counter-attack. Man United, a very difficult team to break down in the half-court in open play, but in the counter-attack, they can be taken. And that goal, Rog, 8 touches between 3 players.
Whole length of the field, starting with Schmeichel.
Yeah.
Quick release to Christian Fuchs.
Yeah.
Charge down the right.
Mm-hmm.
And then you saw Vardy doing something that not a lot of English players do.
I want it there.
Attacking.
I want it. See where I'm pointing? I want it there. There, like that, at this speed,
attacking
now.
Space.
Now.
Attacking space. Which many English players, it's not a quality that we've adored over the last decade, but he does tenaciously. And this was against a United defence that hadn't let in a goal in.
Well, 545 minutes, 9 goals
in open
all
play.
Season, Rog.
Yeah, one touch from Vardy, and then he finished clinically against David De Gea, mm-hmm. the best goalkeeper in the Premier League. To me, Leicester City's season of wonder exemplified in one magical play. And Gary Neville, lifelong United stalwart turned TV analyst, said later, it was the kind of goal United used to score for fun.
Yeah.
No longer.
He actually, it was a very good pass, but it was sort of nicely weighted to get around the defender. And yet it was a little short. His first touch was so good getting it out of his feet. And just the finish, he just puts it. I love a guy that finishes like that. He just puts his laces through the ball. He beat De Gea for speed. And then the celebration, Rod, the celebration was something else. Mine, mine, all effing mine.
Oh, chat, get banged, Dave. Yeah. At Jay Sethke tweeted us, how many goalies in pubs up and down England are claiming they saved a Vardy shot just a few years ago? I've only ever seen this rise before once, Dave.
Uh-huh.
It was in Flashdance, when Jennifer Beal went from living with a dog grunt in a warehouse and went from being an exotic dancer to becoming a professional, despite a complete lack of formal dance education.
Uh-huh.
Jamie Vardy is just like Jennifer Beals, with a few more racist incidents.
Yeah, there. Exactly.
Can I read you a poem?
About those.
First, when there's nothing but a slow glowing dream, then your fear seems to hide deep inside your mind. This is Jamie Vardy. All alone, I have cried silent tears full of pride in a world made of Stockbridge Park steels, made of stone. Incidentally, he's done something quite smart, Vardy, Dave. He and his agent have announced they're establishing an academy to help non-league talent. They're going to bring 60 non-league players every year together to an annual residential camp. And in the money-driven game, what do you smell?
A TV show, Rog. Yeah. I smell a billion-dollar concept. Let's get in touch with Vardy's people. I think that could be coming to a network near you.
I would pay money for you to give Jamie Vardy, the man who says,
beers on the coach on the plane.
I would pay money to watch you coach him as a television personality. It's going to be that.
I'm bringing Barry Hearn.
The behind-the-scenes DVD may be better than the show itself. But Premier League teams, they always prefer to pluck a French or Spanish or Serbian talent than mind their own lower leagues.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Jamie Vardy thinks he's going to be like a gold panner in them their hills. He's going to make a ton of cash, Davo. Anyway, at times, it was hard to remember a game of football was being played once that ball went in. Watching it, your mind just marvelled over and over at the Vardy story. Who'd play him in the biopic, by the way, that we're casting? We had a lot of Redmayne, a lot of McGonaghy suggestions.
Yeah.
At Daniel Higgins suggested Trainspotting era Ewan McGregor. At Ashley 313, some stage actor no one's ever heard of.
Quite like Jennifer Beals might work quite well.
Beals.
I know.
Get me Beals, David. United offered little. Mm-hmm. Martial and Rooney. They were like Jamie Dornan and Dakota Johnson, that kind of chemistry. In 50 Shades of Grey. Yet they found a way to score off a set piece.
Corner from Daly. Blint beautifully actually taken corner, and Schweinsteiger left to roam free in the area and knocks it in with his Kopf, Rog. Tor, Eins, Gegenite.
And Kasper Schmeichel would be annoyed probably. Yeah, he didn't come for that ball again. Leicester City fans chanting, "We are staying up. We are staying up." And Louis van Gaal, he sends you to sleep.
Yeah.
Which is my favourite. And then when Wayne Rooney, and it, what could be quite a significant moment in Manchester United's season, getting the hook on 68 minutes after a truly insipid performance, they advised him, "You're just a Jamie Vardy, a Jamie Vardy." Oh, I feel so bad for the poet known as Wayne Rooney, Davo. Because for all the craziness in his life, the injuries, the transfer want-away rumours, the partying, the grandmother-age prostitutes, the football field's always been his refuge, his happy place. It's his happy place no longer.
Yeah. Well, I think also as a striker, he is struggling against the new breed of strikers in the Premier League. He's still... I can see why the temptation is to move him back, because he still puts a pass together. He still has that football intelligence of yore, Rog, but he's certainly struggling. Although he's replaced, you say it could be a significant moment. He's replaced by Memphis Depay, who comes on and plays even worse than him, Rog. Oh,
poor Memphis. Poor. He's meant to be the future. Mm-hmm. Shaved off his lamb chops this week, which is really the only interesting thing about him. The Apple Watch, David, when it came out, it was meant to be the future.
Future.
Apple's coveted objet d'art.
Yeah.
Now when you see someone wearing one, you almost feel sorry for them. You know, when they pull up their sleeve, he's got an Apple, you were duped. Memphis is the Apple Watch of the Premier League.
It's interesting. Who's the guy whose emails we read?
Bob Lefsetz.
He says that the Apple Watch fails to do its primary job, which is to tell the time. I think that's where the Memphis Depay analogy is so apt, because Memphis Depay fails to do the one thing he's meant to do, which is play football.
So 1-1, United against this Leicester City side, filled with United discards, it should be said. Simpson, Delatt, man of the match for United, Chris Smalling, McNair, very good. De Gea, when needed again, with his blasé heroics.
Yeah.
United managed just two shots on goal. Such an odd mood of panic at United at the moment. Seem to be swamped by crisis, yet they're third in the table, one point behind the league leaders.
And if I sound critical, especially as a Chelsea fan, if I sound critical of United, it's because they are seriously in contention for the title this year. And I think someone other than Chris/Mike Smalling has got to step up and sort of, help them explode. This Christmas period, Rog, I know that the past holiday was a little disappointing. This Christmas period, with all those games happening in such a short period, is going to be fascinating.
And here are United, West Ham, Bournemouth, Norwich, Stoke, Chelsea, Swansea, all crap teams.
Yeah.
Let's burn up Leicester City. News now, of course, that Jamie Vardy may leave in the transfer window if City or Chelsea or anyone comes up with $45 million, a huge amount of money for 28-year-old. Mm-hmm. Ranieri said before the game, "Our fans can dream. Football is about dreams," and he's right. And I think Leicester have given permission to every fan of every team to dream again. They have a tunnel of doom over the holiday period. United, Swansea, Chelsea, Everton, Liverpool and Man City. But I've got to say, one of the joys of the weekend for me was the pageantry before the game.
Oh, Leicester did an amazing job at the King Power.
I mean, that city, the atmosphere, the genuine emotion that surrounds that fairy tale pretender, and what it's meant to the city of Leicester is phenomenal. Mm. We've talked about Leicester. It's an old, fading industrial town. It used to be the centre of the leather industry. It's now like the potato chip factory epicentre in England. It's one of the country's most racially diverse areas, mostly because we told this story before on the pod. In the 1970s, Idi Amin took power in Uganda, and a lot of Ugandans were going to flee the country, obviously, and were headed for England. And the Leicester City Council did the most English thing possible. They put newspaper advertisements in, I believe, a newspaper called the Uganda Argus, saying, "People of Uganda, do not, whatever you do, move to Leicester. Our schools are terrible. We have home overcrowding. Move to England, but do not move to Leicester." The campaign backfired magnificently. Leicester became the only city Ugandans had ever heard of, so they moved there en masse. And I am thrilled for them. I'm thrilled for the city. Thrilled for Ole White. It was magnificent in the booth. My man of the match all weekend.
Impartial, unbiased, but occasionally quite excited. Okay, now, Rog, Man City 3, Southampton 1. Manuel Pellegrini's men climb back to the top of the table. Goals from Kevin, Fabian Delph and Alexander Kolarov give injury-plagued City a comfortable, if not comprehensive, win over Southampton.
Yeah, I mean, how would City rebound after the shocking capitulation against Liverpool?
Yeah.
And without Joe Hart, How would they play without someone going Blair Witch Project in the tunnel?
I know, difficult.
Who's going to remind the team to keep scoring and keep assisting?
Yeah.
Well, they managed pretty well without
How about
it,
more magic? Who's going to remind David Silva to do more magic?
Fabian Delph came in to allow Touré to relinquish his reverse gear and just focus on trying to batter the opponent in the final third. And City came out like the clappers, eager to make a statement from the off. Sterling, Kolarov driving down the flanks. Sterling ran at poor little Yoshida, who seems to implode on a weekly basis defensively. It was his back pass that set up Martial to score in the defeat to United.
Yeah.
And what did Sterling do to him here?
He managed to both pickpocket him, tackle him and nutmeg him all at the same time and ran away with the ball with that peculiar body movement he does when
his
he moves
his trademark,
the speed.
All buttocks, all little flip-flopping hands.
Yeah.
He found De Bruyne's screaming run into the middle and the Ginger Prince netted his first Premier League goal since October the 3rd. Fabian Delph's deflected thumper made it 2-0. Honestly, it could have been 4 or 5 by that time. Mm-hmm. Southampton, usually so organised and disciplined, tactically prepared, were just none of these. It was a kind of performance in the first half that you often get in the Christmas run after the team have had one too many pints and pies. But it's really a tribute to how powerful City can be. And just when you say to yourself, Manchester City title pretenders, Southampton got back into the game.
Yeah, Mane, Rog to Sane, Long, they get back to 2-1. Then, frankly, Willy Caballero kept Man City in the lead almost single-handedly.
It was Tadic coming on, who brought ambition, invention. Mane and Davis playing wide, looking for balls through the channel. Southampton started to mine that space. And Willie, string of stand-up saves to make all balls proud. Mm-hmm. Kun Aguero limped off. EPL is all the lesser for that sight. And we were treated to just sad, longing stares from the injured Vincent Kompany in the stands.
Oh, yeah, the director loved that.
Yeah, whenever they cut to him, I always think, what's good? They should put a little bubble by his head saying, why, oh, why do they miss me so much? Mm-hmm. Southampton's courage grew. But then City caught them on the break. Boney, De Bruyne, during the Southampton defence, mesmerising them. And there was Kolarov with the backbreaker.
Yeah, good finish.
And it gets better for City. Fascinating piece of news today. Sheikh Mansour, multi-billionaire owner, has sold a 13% stake.
Yeah, I saw this.
In City Football Group to Chinese investors.
Chinese, as Louis van Gaal would say.
Yeah, well, when he thinks about Chinese, he's thinking about Wing's restaurant.
Yeah.
When Man City think about Chinese, they think about the state-backed China Media Capital Holdings and CITIC Capital company run by Li Ruigang, China's Rupert Murdoch.
Huh.
It just happens to be a senior leader in the Communist Party.
Just happened.
Yeah. The interesting thing is Mansour doesn't need the money, obviously. His wealth estimated at around $30 billion, which is kind of give or take what our contract is. But the the $400 million stake, it gives Abu Dhabi's owner a strategic alliance with huge figures in the Chinese establishment to give him a leg up in the just overwhelmingly, salaciously untapped football market that is China. United have had a decade head start, but brace yourself for a new City franchise like Manchester, like Melbourne, like NYCFC starting in China soon. If I was Poku, I'd be practicing my Mandarin right now, David.
Will this help NYCFC get a stadium? That's all I want to know, Rog. Tottenham, 0. Chelsea, 0. Spurs extend their unbeaten streak to 13 games and stay 2 points just outside the top four. Chelsea came close with their only shot on target, a 67th-minute Eden Hazard volley that forced Hugo Lloris into a smart save. But the real highlight came when Diego Costa chucked his pink substitutes bib in the general direction of Jose Mourinho after spending the entire game on the bench and lighting the British media on fire.
First, the football, David.
Yeah.
I mean, one team unbeaten in 12, the other two victories, hoping for green shoots of recovery. It was a runt of a game. Mm-hmm. Chelsea came with limited ambition, but brave new Spurs were a little knackered from their Thursday trip to beautiful Karabag in the Europa League. Spurs circulated the ball around in their polished practice fashion. Tottenham, they outmuscled Chelsea comprehensively from the outset. Dembele was just resplendent. It was really a septic wreck of chippiness and poor decision-making.
Yeah, no, definitely. Tottenham out-physicaled them. Chelsea, in some ways, this was a vintage Chelsea with one major asterisk, is that this is how Chelsea used to play, very tight defensively. I thought the back four looked really very good.
The back seven.
Well, including Ivanovic. But this was about Willian and Hazard and Pedro and Oscar running around, the four little horsemen running around, creating a lot of space between them, but to, in typical Chelsea style, to little or no effect. The disappearance of both Fabregas and Matic, the continuing, I just don't know where they are, I don't know where they've gone, but not only felt disappeared, but Matic losing physical battle after physical battle.
What shocked me about this edition of Chelsea is just how few of the players seem to want to step up into the breach, preferring to leave Jose exposed. The first half, I mean, Tottenham undid themselves, Eriksen held onto the ball too long at his peril, Chelsea's back seven stifled and confused Spurs, but they gave so few resources to the attacking side of play, Chelsea. It really became trench warfare in cleats. And most shockingly of all from this game, Davo, Cesc decline. It's not quite Chuck Knobloch or David Duval, but it's Duval-ish. It's Duval-esque.
Well, I mean, I would put Matic right up there with him. I mean, without an anchor to hold down the centre of midfield, there's just very little with all those smalls playing around you that you can go and do. Having said that, this is a dramatic improvement for Chelsea, a team that were leaking more than 2.5 goals per game. Now they've gone 3 consecutive matches where they haven't conceded in all competitions. And I think that, for Chelsea fans, gives us some relief.
A most captivating part of the pursuit was just watching the copious amounts of swirling plastic garbage.
It was amazing.
Bizarrely that. Confined to just one quadrant of the field.
Yeah.
The other thing about this game that always really annoys me, when you're watching and the commentary is just a little ahead of the vision.
Oh, can't stand that.
Arlo's disappointment tells you before you saw a shot whether the ball had gone in or not.
Yeah.
I honestly felt terrible for West Coasters who had to get up at 4 a.m. to watch fearful football played by one exhausted team and another floundering around the bottom of the table, eager to grind out a point. But let's get to it, Davo. Bibgate, Bibmageddon, long simmering, as Arden, not scored in 1,555 minutes spread out over 17 games, but preferred to Diego Costa, who's bunged onto the naughty step. Really going back to Tel Aviv, Davo, where he and Mourinho had argued in public on the field. Mourinho later tried to laugh it off, saying we'd had kisses and cuddles in the locker room, conjuring images of Leonardo DiCaprio doing it with a bear in The Revenant.
Well, I think it maybe goes back a few more games than that. There's been significant frustration coming from the bench towards Diego Costa. A lot of people have told me have been at the games because his refusal to go into the box when Hazard has been, or Willian have been crossing the ball, and his refusal to go and chase down balls in the box. And it's been confusing, particularly galling in Tel Aviv, where he didn't do it and obviously had a big fight with Mourinho at halftime, even though they seem to make up. The fact is, this is, you know, typical Mourinho man management. Every single Chelsea star has had their moment on the naughty step this season.
It's a huge list now, David. Captain John Terry, Eden Hazard, Cesc Fabregas, Nemanja Matic, Dave Azpilicueta, Pedro, Ivanovic, all have been dropped.
The only one who hasn't is Willian, frankly.
All have been quickly brought back to first team play. We'll chat about that one in a minute. But you watch it. He warmed up, he came onto the field, wouldn't warm up to begin with, came onto the field without his cleats, all these minor details now, front stages, everything. I mean, this film of him throwing the bib backwards, of course, like everything else this season, he misses the target if he was aiming at Jose Mourinho. It's been analysed as if it's a Zapruder film. But emotionally, as a Chelsea fan, when you watch it, what do you feel?
Well, I mean, this isn't actually as a Chelsea fan. I don't think conflict is a bad thing in sports. I don't mind when players fight with each other. I don't mind when managers and players get into it. Diego Costa should be feeling like his place is under threat. He should be working harder. He scored last weekend at Norwich. Jose made the point. Not everything's okay because you scored a goal against Norwich in your third attempt. It was a good goal, but it doesn't change your entire season. He's taking his turn. There seems to be some tension. Pictures coming from Chelsea training today. He's back in there working hard. I do think, though, that based on your interview, when Jose told you that one of his secrets of management is he treats all players the same, I can't believe that he would be letting Ruben Loftus-Cheek or Solanke or even John Obi Mikel get away with throwing the bib in his general direction. And I think that this could have longer-term
George
impact.
George Orwell, Animal Farm, all animals are equal. Some animals are more equal than others. Yeah. I want to say, the brilliance of Diego Costa's gesture of contempt. Turning round, first of all, the reverse nature of the throw. Second of all, the pink nature of the bib. Would it have been as funny
With
if
a
it
yellow
was a yellow bib.
No.
I don't think it would have
No,
done.
It was great. It was a pink bib. It was the perfect colour.
And then just the analysis, the depth of analysis, as if, as I said, the bib gate was the Zapruder film. John yeah. Obi Mikel's desperate efforts to suffocate his smile.
Yeah.
Now held up as proof Jose Mourinho has lost the Chelsea locker room. But I also think the whole thing is a sign of how much football's changed since the 1980s. Men used to go to the game to kick the crap out of other men, throw bricks at them from the... I used to watch at Goodison Park hooligans throw darts and knives and bricks at the opposing fans. Now we're obsessed with an attack by a pink bib, Davey, which I guess captures for me modern football. If he really wants to hurt me, it is not with a bib. The great line from Jose Mourinho. What does he do with Costa now? As we said, he's dropped so many players and quickly brought them back to the first team. They've all responded in his mind to the threat of a lost team place. This feels different though, Davey. This is less dropping for lack of form, more a challenge to Mourinho's authority and control. Which even if he would have to rely on Loic Remy or, God, worse, Radamel Falcao, it's something. I mean, can Mourinho let that go? But Chelsea have been briefing they're not going to enforce any internal disciplinary action. They're going to monitor his attitude closely, quote, in training, to be sure this cracks me up. Costa is in the right frame of mind to return. When has he ever played with the right frame of mind?
No, he's never played in the right frame of mind. See, I don't
What frame of mind are they actually testing for exactly?
I don't think Diego Costa's skills have declined. I think that he was in very bad shape at the beginning of this season, and I think he's now got his body looks, just his face looks completely different than it was at the beginning of the season. He's still playing similar kind of football. He just is not, I think, giving the same effort that he was before, which does strike me as a player not particularly happy.
Honestly, I've Jose tested. While they're at it, this was, according to him, quote, the best Chelsea of the season. And if that's true, I mean, it's a sign of how far the club have fallen this season.
But
if that is what qualifies as
the best. But I do think that that is also Jose's view of what football... I mean, for Chelsea fans, this performance, I said it to you and you rolled your eyes at me when I said it yesterday, but this was not very different than watching a Chelsea performance last year when they won the league. They played a lot of games like this when they were offensively insipid, but they managed to sort of grind out 0-0 or 1-0 wins by conceding very little at the back. It was almost vintage Chelsea, and that's how Jose Mourinho, frankly, likes playing football. Okay, Norwich won, Arsenal won. Arsenal failed to capitalise on Leicester and United's drop points, surrendering a 1-0 lead at Carrow Road. Mesut Ozil put Arsene Wenger's men ahead in the 30th minute, but just before halftime, the Canaries levelled the score via Lewis Graben. Arsenal remain in fourth, 2 points behind City and Leicester and one off United. Can we just say before we discuss the football that Arsenal flew to Norwich for this game? That was a 14-minute flight from Luton to Norwich. I can't think of many places in Britain that are closer to Norwich than Luton. I would actually think that if someone was going to Luton, they probably have really great mates who live in Norwich and they frequently meet at a pub between the two towns.
Maybe they needed the Starwood points.
Yeah, they probably did. I mean, they needed the air miles.
David Squires, the Guardian football cartoonist, joked that fossil fuel billionaire Flamini must have been livid that Arsenal didn't use his fortune to have Norwich move closer to North London.
Yeah.
And neither you said, why did you not use my clean energy teleporter?
Yeah.
To the game, third successive match Arsenal have not won. Perhaps more significantly, the second successive game they've dropped points and key players have dropped like flies. Last week it was Coquelin and Arteta. This week, Laurent Koscielny and Alexis Sanchez went off with muscle injuries before the 63rd minute. And in Wenger's words, Santi Cazorla ended up playing the second half, quote, on one leg. I mean, that Arsenal injury list, Alexis, Koscielny, Gibbs, Arteta, Coquelin, Rizicki, Walcott, Wilshere, Welbeck, is, I mean, it's world class. It's a world class injury list.
Yeah, you're right.
And Wenger's taken a huge amount of heat for playing Alexis, despite the fact he knew Alexis was, quote, a hamstring worry before the game.
Yeah, fortunately, Arsenal still do have a very deep squad. And look, Arsenal are contending for the title. They are right in there. This is the sort of game I think they would have wanted to have 3 points from, though, Rog.
Yeah, I mean, Alexis is fascinating. We're not privy to watch the players in training, nor do we see their medical reports that Arsene does before the game. He also said before the press something which I think is fascinating about Alexis. He said he always wants to play. He always wants to train. He's like a hunting lion. He has to catch an animal in the first 200 metres. He's one of those kinds of killers. When he goes, it's the kill, and after, they have to stop. I think he sounds like it's just his passion for the game and his love of play make him a very hard man to manage. At BVeal87 said, correct me if my calculations are wrong. I believe Arsenal have picked up more injuries than points in November. Hashtag sadnap. 12 out of 12 points plundered in October with that buccaneering style seem like a memory. 2 points they won in November from their three games, and injuries far outstripped the points in that month, Ben. Once again, Arsene Wenger's nourishing golden dreams of glory have had the harsh, cold water of reality poured on them. And from a human perspective, Davo, one of Captain Ahab's style longing for Wenger for that league title, I feel his pain.
Yeah, he certainly doesn't look as happy as he did a couple of weeks ago. Really significant point for Norwich, who look like they're going to be in that relegation fight all season. A really, really big point for them. Okay, Liverpool 1, Swansea 0. Jurgen Klopp's men surge into sixth place thanks to a second-half James Milner penalty after a somewhat dodgy decision, I think, Rog. Swansea, meanwhile, continue their free fall down the table. After a quick start to the season, they are now only 4 points clear of the relegation zone.
Klopp kiss Liverpool. I've got to say, I marvel at the number of players Klopp's reinvigorated. He's like a man of God healing lepers. Lallana, Firmino, Lovren, Moreno.
Yeah.
All of whom were deemed duds during the darker days of the Brodge regime.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they combined to dominate Swansea with their passing. Emre Can in Lucas's holding role. Jordan Henderson even returning for a substitute cameo. Lifting Liverpool's fans' spirits as Gary Monk's side just appeared befuddled. But for all that movement, for all that commitment, they created little in the way of shots, just two the entire game. Benteke was like a rigid fixed point of reference when mobile flexibility was needed. It's really like watching an NFL fullback stumble into a ballet performance. But one of those shots was Milner's decisive, slightly dodgy penalty.
Yeah.
It's all a bit like watching a Bichon Frise dry humping its owner's leg in the park.
Yeah, Neil Taylor got to feel slightly aggrieved at that. The ball hit at him quite hard from fairly close range. I don't think the arm came out very much. He just turned a little. Referee immediately points to the spot.
Unusual body shape, but Swansea now 1-10. Their bubble continues to burst.
I have a slightly unusual body shape if a ball's being whacked at me from about 3 yards away.
Oh, more trigger happy clubs would have replaced Gary Monk by now, or ones more able to pay his compensation. We forget with Swansea how tiny a club they are. I mean, they are not much bigger than Bournemouth. They've experienced a similar giddy rags to riches journey. For them, Leicester and Man City now await, and I wonder whether Gary Monk will still have a job by Christmas. But for Liverpool in Europa League week, shorn of key players, to get 3 points, big win. Third of the week for them. They were 10th when Klopp arrived. They're now 6, just 2 points behind Spurs, who we've all anointed title contenders. Wheels within wheels, Davey.
Mm-hmm.
Endearing Klopp interviews continue to dribble out. Adored this week, he told the press, he adores Phil Collins, and even his love of Phil Collins has not dented my admiration for the Teutonic Care Bear. He loves the Beatles, he loves Genesis, he loves Kiss. He said, I wanted to be a doctor. I have helper syndrome to a certain extent. He said, his helper syndrome does not extend to Daniel Sturridge.
This was significant, because he also says things that are quite cutting. A couple of weeks ago about the Liverpool fans making him feel lonely by leaving too early. And this week about Sturridge, is he's got to learn the difference between real pain, serious pain, and only pain.
Oh, a line which instantly made me think of Laurence Olivier as the dentist torturer in Marathon Man, David.
Similar, giving it bifters. Similar people.
Giving it bifters.
Similar people, Rog. One of the games of the weekend, Crystal Palace 5, Newcastle 1. Super Alan Pardew, who left Newcastle for Palace last season, who can forget that, gets to witness the continued crumbling of his old side live and in person. A palindrome of a score sheet. MacArthur, Bolasie, Zaha, Bolasie, MacArthur. That's a Wilfred Zaha sandwich. Sees Palace move into 7th place. Newcastle slip back into 19th.
Newcastle fans travelled 380 miles.
Score too early.
Yeah, well, not to watch their team win. They knew they had no chance of that. But just to scream crap at Johan Kabay and Alan Pardew. They must have had a great time all afternoon because their team got blasted.
Yeah.
Yes, they scored first. By the way, Scott Dann, Crystal Palace defender, you validated one of your most important theories. He said, when they went a goal up, if anything, it actually helped us.
Yes, you don't want to score that early.
He said it probably gave us that little bit of urgency to go and take the game by the scrap of the neck. Newcastle did score too early. Their defending was horrific. And by the way, darker times to come. Newcastle are now briefing the media. The club won't spend any money. in the winter window, they believe, with the arrivals of Wijnaldum, Mitrovic, Torvan, Mbemba and Ivan Tovey, that they've already brought enough to get mid-table obscurity in the bag. But they just look like a team for whom their athletic highlight of the week are the fistfights they have on the training ground in between games. Yeah. It's an amazing stat, Davo. This time last year, Newcastle were ninth under Alan Pardew.
Yeah,
since Pardew he's left,
out.
They've won 16% of their matches. Sack Pardew, campaigners, you win again. After the game, super out, he didn't take the bait of the English media reporters. He just kept taking the high road and told them how great he thinks Newcastle is and how they'll work out a way to avoid relegation. Mm-hmm. If you ever enjoy a moment in your life half as much as Alan Pardew must have enjoyed those 90 minutes,
yeah,
you will live a happy life. I've got to ask you, Davo, revenge. Are you someone that's motivated by revenge? Because I am definitely a grudge holder.
No, not really. Not really. I sometimes think of revenge, and sometimes think, oh, I'm going to get that person back for doing that to me, and I'm going to wait a very long time. Revenge is a dish best served cold. But honestly, 2 days later, I forget all about it and never think about it ever again. I have a terrible memory, as you well know. I can't do revenge. I believe in long-term revenge, but unfortunately, my memory is so bad, I never remember it.
I have a list, David.
Okay, who's on the list?
Like,
am
start?
I on the list?
No.
Okay, thank God.
You were.
Yeah.
But my revenge is
you got me back.
This pod with me. I got to say, I'm trying not to give a crap the older I get. I'm trying to live my life by that old George Herbert quote that the mantra of living well is the best revenge. I do believe an eye for an eye will only make the whole world blind, which is what Gandhi said. I've been trying to embrace a more kind of Buddhist approach to life.
Really?
I? Yeah.
Okay.
It's not working.
Yeah, I haven't noticed it. Talking of holistic approaches, Rog, Big Sam Allardyce, his Sunderland beat Stoke City 2-0 this weekend. The Black Cats move out of the relegation zone for the first time all season, thanks to late goals from Patrick Van Aanholt and Duncan Watmore. Big Sam has led Sunderland to back-to-back wins for the first time in 6 months.
At the Real Jamuki, tweeted us, powerful Yedlin throw in leads to Sunderland second. A lot of Americans annoyed he didn't get an assist on this.
Yeah.
Is he the new Rory Delap? We've been laughing about how good he is at throw-ins. It was fantastic. He set up Duncan Watmore. In fact, their partnership on the right flank for Sunderland is blistering and quite exciting to see in development. Watmore,
I actually read the score wrong, Rog. It's DeAndre Yedlin's throw in 7, Stoke City 0. I didn't get that right.
Watmore is an amazing story. Rare footballer with a first-class honours degree in economics. What's first-class? It's like being magna cum laude.
It's having a 4.0, having a great grade point average in
Sam Allardyce way, has now challenged him, quote, to acquire a master's in Premier League football. The ginger super sub has 2 goals... off just 3 shots, it's going to be amazing to see how he adapts to a starting role, which is soon sure to come.
Sam Allardyce's former team, Rog, West Ham 1, West Brom 1. A 25-yard free kick from the Hammers' Mauro Zárate. Beautiful free kick, one of the goals of the season.
A whistler.
Rog. And a Winston Reid own goal split the spoils at Upton Park. West Ham sit 8th, level on points with Palace. West Brom in 13th, 8 clear of the drop zone. Aston Villa 2, Watford 3. SOS signs continue to go unanswered in Birmingham as the Villains lose their 11th game of the season. An Odion Ighalo strike, Alan Hutton own goal and Troy Deeney header leave Villa with just 5 points. That equals a Premier League record for the least points 7/19 into the season, Rog.
Oh, and the new lows always for Villa. This week they were done in by striker Troy Deeney, who has a tattoo of Villa's arch rivals Birmingham City etched into his calf muscle. He scored in front of the Villa faithful in the Holt End. It does not get any more excruciating than that. Post-game, Deeney lauded it up, telling the press that as a kid he failed a trial at Villa Park because he was, quote, more interested in chasing girls, as opposed to 87% of the other footballers in the world.
I love that Birmingham accent. It always sounds like you've got a cold. More interested in chasing girls. I love it. Oh, talking of excruciating, Rog. Bournemouth 3, Everton 3. One of the most exciting football games so far this season, particularly for the neutral. The Cherries complete a comeback from 2-0 down in the 87th minute, only to see Everton take the lead again in the 95th minute, but 3 short minutes later with essentially the last touch of the game.
Minutes. They were endless.
Junior Stanislas, English player with a foreign-sounding name, headed a Charlie Daniels cross past Tim Howard, sending the Vitality Stadium and Jeff Mostyn, no doubt, into a frenzy. Football is amazing. Roger?
Yep, the two latest goals in the Premier League this season, both scored in the same bloody game. At Cliffin Urbana tweeted, I feel truly sorry for Rog Bennett today. His heart is torn. His longtime love, Everton, versus his new love, Bournemouth. Hashtag up the cherries. Don't think about me, Cliffin. Think about poor Eddie Howe, a childhood Evertonian, the Bournemouth manager. I wonder what he felt inside his body as his team quickly went two goals down to an effervescent Everton. Funes Mori's first Everton League goal, that thumping header, actually the first set piece Everton have scored this season. And then Lukaku netting his eighth in eight games after an exquisite, exquisite Jerry Vardy. But then Everton went into cruise control, James McCarthy hobbled off, and Everton just got undone by their youthful exuberance and just callow lack of experience. Lukaku, majestic, but just 22. Ross Barkley, John Stones, Jerry D are all 21, Davo. And I knew things were going to go dark because NBC clicked in to the last minutes of the game, causing at Hague Parnos to tweet, NBC switches to Bournemouth Everton just in time for that finish and we're supposed to believe it wasn't scripted.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, football of the weekend, Rog, was in MLS. The Columbus Crew will host the Portland Timbers Sunday to determine the winner of MLS Cup. The Crew survived a harrowing final few minutes at Red Bull Arena Sunday evening to advance 2-1 on aggregate. The Timbers drew 2-2 in Frisco, Texas Sunday and advanced past FC Dallas 5-3 on aggregate.
Yeah, first game, Dallas, all the last minute excitement of Bournemouth Everton, but none of the finishing until Lucas Milano's injury time stutter step fake out clinched it for Portland. Save for Dallas, Oscar Pereira's defeated young homegrown side were just fearless. They were a sensation this season and a stark reminder to everyone that DPs are a diversionary marketing device in MLS. They don't correlate to actually winning anything in the league. But Portland, they're a remarkable footballing story, not just in America, but for world football. 4 years on from their return to the big leagues, they fostered a unique, passionate footballing culture built on joy, wonder, and now winning football.
And woodcutting.
Yeah, that's what was missing in America. Merritt Paulson.
Yeah.
Coach Caleb Porter both weathered a ton of criticism. I'm thrilled for them both. But Timber Jerry, David.
Yeah.
Our mate Timber Jerry. Jurgen Klinsmann, if you're listening, he's got to get a crack at the US men's national team now.
Yeah.
Get him in there. Second game, though. Oh. What a stunner.
Oh, game of the weekend. The finish. There's something about, I love playoff football, Rog. I enjoy playoff soccer. This wouldn't have been a captivating game had it been just a regular game. It was the second leg, and even still 2-0 down on aggregate, you just felt, if just Red Bulls can just get one goal, they can get back.
Frenzied football, terrible refereeing, awful decision making in the final third, but you could not take your eyes off the game. Luis Robles, magnificent in goal, Will Trapp at the heart of much of that was good for Columbus, and then Ebong scored a goal to give Red Bulls hope. Get a bang.
Yeah.
Like to see that banner at Red Bulls next season. But what happened right at the climax, David? Right at the dead. The Red Bulls were just chucking on one Wright Phillips after another. I think they would have brought on Stephen Wright and Stone Phillips.
Oh, this was Kevin Wright Phillips, I think, who came on. It was BWP, Rog, heads it. It looks like it's going in from the angle you're watching from the center camera. Hits the post. And then our mate, Kai Kamara, and he said it actually was terrified as it was coming towards him. He told us yesterday that he was terrified he was going to hit his own net. And then Nathan Finley turned around and said, I was terrified you were going to do that too. And he managed to clear it off the line.
He described what went through his mind as, don't get spaghetti legs, was what he told us. Columbus, another fantastic American football culture, will host the final. I'm sure MLS wished they had a New York Cup final for ratings purposes. But Columbus, Portland it is. I say Fox have done a bang-up job of covering MLS this season.
And not bang-up in the Jamie Vardy sense. They've done an amazing, amazing, amazing
job. Love watching it. Stoner, Friedel, excellent. I admire Alexi greatly. Julie Stewart-Binks.
Oh, the best sideline reporting I have ever, ever witnessed in professional soccer.
She's a revelation. Question for you, Dave. How many of Frank Lampard, Steven Gerrard, Didier Drogba, Kaká and Andrea Pirlo do you think were watching these semi-final games, give or take?
That symbol for less than one.
All right, let's move on from that one then, because I'm reminded I'm sitting with one of the greatest proponents of Premier League playoffs.
Oh, I would love Premier League playoffs. Let's just look at the table right now and imagine if the season ended today, what would happen? Round one, we'd have Manchester City against West Ham United. That would be amazing. Leicester taking on Palace. Manchester United against Liverpool. And Arsenal versus Tottenham. The 4 seed versus the 5 seed. It would be amazing. You know, Chelsea would only sit 7 points out of the playoffs right now. It would just be so, so good. I've completely changed my mind about this. I want playoffs. There is a downside. The regular season win
doesn't really mean anything.
The supporters' shield doesn't really mean anything.
Which is why I think playoffs are bonkers. I would have the league as just a league in MLS. Make every game count.
Yeah.
And then I'd love to make the US Open Cup bigger, David.
Playoffs
and have the semi-finals kick in after the league has ended and then just semi-final it and final it and end the season like that.
But as a television person, this is never going to happen.
You have a cup.
The playoffs
you have a cup.
Would rate through the roof. Rog, they would be amazing. Amazing.
Is it all about the ratings, Davey?
Yep.
It is.
It is. I'm a television man. So you can take the man off television, Rog, but you can't take television out of the man. Okay. The MLS Cup final, Rog, Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. The Ballon d'Or. FIFA announced the Ballon d'Or shortlist yesterday, and many people are lamenting the omission of one man, Luis Suarez. Suarez was left off in favour of his Barcelona teammates Lionel Messi and Neymar, as well as Real Madrid's Cristiano Ronaldo.
If Suarez was on it, it probably would have been at Ronaldo's expense. I'm just wondering who you should have taken out of that trio so that Jordan Morris wouldn't feel aggrieved at his...
Yeah, or DeAndre Yedlin's arms should have made the list, Roger. On the women's side, Japan's Miyama Aya and Germany's Celia Sasic join our hero, America's own Carly Lloyd, on the shortlist. The US women's national team manager, Jill Ellis, is also on the shortlist for Coach of the Year, as is English coach, Mark Sampson. The awards will be handed out January 11th at the annual FIFA Ballon d'Or Gala in Zurich. Okay, onto the Ravens. Our first Raven is from Amanda Cover, or Cover. Brad Guzan and Charlie Brown. I can see the resemblance between the two. Always falling over and having problems in sector 4 point everywhere. Who would play the rest of Premier League Peanuts?
Oh, this is what a question.
Excellent. Okay.
Did you watch the Peanuts movie?
I didn't see it yet.
I watched it. I found its social outsider outcast message eerily reminiscent of Angel Di Maria's time at Manchester United. It's a lot of horror for kids to watch with their own eyes. But let's say Charlie Brown and Brad Guzan. Definite resemblance. Pigpen. It's got to be Jamie Vardy. Linus. Got to be Anthony Martial.
Yeah, that child.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Brighter, more sophisticated than all those around him.
I like it.
Tough one for me, Davo.
Yeah.
Trying to get my head around Schroeder.
Schroeder. Lallana, maybe.
They had Hugo Lloris.
Oh, yeah, interesting.
A sophisticate. John Terry, inarguably Lucy.
Well, yeah, interesting. Interesting. I like Mitrovic as Lucy.
All right, one that I can't be wrong about. Per Mertesacker. Mm-hmm. Kite-eating tree. We're down to the hard one now, Dave.
Could be Crouchy.
We've got to cast Snoopy.
Catamole.
For Snoopy?
Yeah.
The lovable rogue?
Yeah.
Oh, it's not much lovable. I just want to cuddle Snoopy.
Mm-hmm.
Juan Mata went the obvious.
He's got it. Would sort of sleep on his back on top of his... On top of his hutch.
I imagine him hanging out with Santi Cazorla as Woodstock.
Yeah, very good. David Silva also could be Snoopy. Okay, Rog, the winner of the coveted Guinness Men in Blazers Poet, Philosopher, Sucker, Scribe, Raven of the Week is Brian and Dawn Dickerson. My wife and I watch your show religiously. Well, more like I watch your show religiously and she sits next to me checking Facebook and glancing towards the TV and laughing.
During
a recent
Good Wife
episode, she mentioned that she believes Rog is suffering from a condition called paresthesia.
Oh, tell me more.
Not realizing what she was referring to at the time, I hazarded a guess. Is paresthesia a cause of baldness? She replied, not that, the nipple tingling. You see, my wife is a lactation consultant, and nipples are her area of expertise. She's seen more nipples than you and I ever will by a long mile. Even you, Davo. She went on to explain paresthesia is a sensation of partial numbness or tingling of the nipples that can come as a result of a tight-fitting bra or shirt. And from the sound of it, Rog may have a pretty serious case. Fortunately, there is an easy-to-use product she recommends to her clients in cases like this. Please see attached suggestion for the nipple butter, Roger. I know what I'm getting you as a holiday gift.
You don't have to. I'm wearing some.
You are?
Yeah.
How's it doing? Are your nipples tingling?
It's making my shirt stick to my blazer.
Thank you so much, Brian and Dawn. That is a fantastic
Dr.
observation.
Dawn.
Okay, your weekend looks like this, courtesy of Mini USA. Stoke City versus Manchester City, 7:45 a.m. Eastern Time, Saturday on NBCSN. Arsenal versus Sunderland, 10 a.m. Saturday on NBCSN. Chelsea versus Bournemouth, Rog.
Up the cherries.
12:30 p.m. Saturday on the network NBC, Rog. And on Sunday, the aforementioned MLS Cup final, Columbus Crew versus Portland Timbers, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN. There are many other ways to connect to us, Rog. One is our Amazon Emporium, which helps keep the show going anytime you go on Amazon. For items big or small, just click off the Emporium page. Men in Blazers gets a tiny percentage that allows us to cover the cost of creating the show. What are you putting in the Emporium this week, Rogelio?
My Thanksgiving read, The German War, A Nation Under Arms, 1939-45.
Oh, interesting.
By Nicholas Stargott. Oh, it's a magnum opus, in which the Oxford Don mines diaries and letters from ordinary Germans to build a complex narrative of their motivations and thinking from the very beginning of war to the culmination, which I like better. It's beautiful, it's horrific, it's subtle. It's a 600-page journey from, I guess, omnipotence and wonder to a widespread sense of victimhood. I've never read anything like it, and if you're fascinated by the history of the first half of the 20th century, I'd say it is a must read.
Brilliant, Rog. Well, last week we got a tweet from Dar Solo. You may not learn a lot about football, soccer, by listening to the Men in Blazers pod, but you'll sure learn a lot about meat thermometers. That was after last week. I put the meat thermometers in. It really worked over Thanksgiving. That really inspired me for this week. I've been going deep into pancake making, Rog. I've been really working on my pancake making skills. What I like to do, and I think that all GFOPs should do this, we get up on Saturday morning and we basically abandon our families, our children, and we just watch vast quantities of football. And so for me, while I'm watching the football and the kids are up with me for the early game, I start going heavy into pancake making every Saturday to turn the watching of Premier League football into a nutritious family activity. And a breakthrough came courtesy...
I'm cheating on pies.
Pancakes are a form of pie, essentially, is the way I view it, especially if you get into fillings. Don't even start me on fillings, because I'm not talking about fillings today. A really sort of shout out to my girlfriend, Laura. She really helped me with this. Is the use of a simple turkey baster, Rog. A simple turkey baster can transform the enjoyment you can give your children in pancake making, and I've also quite enjoyed them myself. You just dip it in your pancake mix, and you can make shapes of anything you want. Mickey Mouse's, hearts, man buns. You can make any shape for your children for breakfast. Turkey basters, also cheap, so much fun. I quite like the Tovolo dripless baster. It's only $11, Rog. It's in stock. You want it tomorrow, order it right now. You can get same-day delivery on Amazon Prime, Rog.
You also wanted to plug an iTunes television show.
Oh, yeah. The Men Who Built America. Just got into that heavily. It's very, very good. Very different than a baster, but it's excellent, The Men Who Built America. It's the story of the men who built America, Rockefeller, Vanderbilt, Carnegie, Ford, and these incredible relationships that existed between each of them. It's sort of half drama, half doc. They interview sort of contemporary entrepreneurs, Mark Cuban, Donald Trump, Donny Deutsch, and several other people. It's interesting, but it's the dramatic telling and the linking of all these men.
Sounds amazing slash unbearable.
It's really, really good.
I can't wait. Is there an episode about Bruce Arena?
There isn't. Bruce Arena and Bob Bradley did not make it, nor did Frankie Hayduke or Jeff Agus. I find it remarkable.
If we're plugging iTunes crap,
yeah,
I'm going to plug Elite Squad.
Okay, what's that?
It's if you fell down the Narcos wormhole.
Yeah.
It is by the same team. It's Brazilian television series.
Yeah.
It is absolutely fantastic.
My Jamie Vardy series, where we pluck non-league players and get them on elite teams, that'll be on iTunes in a few years. Look out for that. I'm trying to think of a funny pun for the title. Actually, email us if you come up with a great title for that.
That's it, mate. It's over.
That's it, Rog.
Yeah,
you're right, that's it. You can now watch entire episodes of our crap TV show on NBC Sports Live Extra. Sorry about that, Apple TV.
We had MLS Cup in the...
And Roku, I know, it's a good interview. It's also up on our website, meninblazers.com. Also on meninblazers.com, a place to sign up for our newsletter, The Raven, which we produce with our partner Guinness, and check out our Spotify account, men_in_blazers. meninblazers.wikispaces.com /. That's a wonder of the modern world. Follow us on Twitter at Rog Bennett, at Men in Blazers, at Embassy Davies, on Instagram at Men in Blazers, at Embassy _ Davies. We've got a Facebook too, and a subreddit, meninblazers.reddit.com, maintained by GFOP's Akshay, Calvin, and Alex. And you can always send your ravens to the crap part of Soho. You can email us at meninblazers@gmail.com. Vendorpunk Rog.
War pig.
Who wants to sex Mutombo?
Explosion.
Courage.
Take that, Gloria.
Is that your analysis?
Corduroy is coming.
It's already here. Abrigado, rock on, mate.
Kung Fu Fight in America. And happy Hanukkah.
Yes, happy Hanukkah. Love you, Roger.
I hate Hanukkah, David.